And so we wake not just to a new day, but to a new world. Welcome to Downrange Radio and our exclusive coverage of the landmark Supreme Court decision reaffirming the individual right to keep and bear arms. I'm your host, Michael Bain, also the host of Shooting Gallery every Wednesday night on the Outdoor Channel, so you certainly know where I stand on this issue as a longtime Second Amendment advocate. But what we want to do today, now yesterday we spent a lot of time talking about the decision itself. We're going to be doing more of that today, but one of the things I want to do today, Friday, the day after the decision, is to talk about some of those implications. We're going to talk a little bit about the decision. We're going to be talking to Second Amendment attorneys. We're going to be talking to Second Amendment scholars. We're going to be talking to a lot of people to help you get a broader view of, number one, we have a great victory. What did we win? Let's talk about what we won. Number two, let's talk about what we need to do. Okay, and we already know part of what we need to do, right? Immediately yesterday, 15 minutes after the decision, the Illinois State Rifle Association filed suit against the draconian ban on handguns in Chicago and the suburbs. They were immediately joined by the National Rifle Association late yesterday afternoon. They were joined by the Second Amendment Foundation. So the Chicago ban is in the sights, and realistically, the Chicago ban is going to fall. Mayor Daley is a windbag, and he's, of course, been on every show everywhere that he will stand no matter what and defend the Chicago gun ban. Welcome to the club, brother. Welcome to the club. You stand and defend it. We're coming after it. Also on the agenda are bans in San Francisco. The on-again, off-again ban in San Francisco was struck down by the California Supreme Court as violating their preemption law, but by golly, those guys in San Francisco are determined to have a ban. It's in the sights. There are other bans around the country. They're in the sights. Specific weapons prohibitions, they're in the gun sights. We're going to talk with some of our Second Amendment experts on how we go forward. First up is Larry Keen. Larry Keen is general counsel for the National Shooting Sports Foundation, and key thing to know about Larry is that he was actually the primary architect of our defense against the numerous city suits. If you remember a few years back in those dark days of the Clinton administration, when it looked as if the firearms industry was quite literally going to be sued into oblivion, Larry was one of the lead guy in putting together how we fought those suits. And you know, he never lost one right up until we got that great national preemption, which blocked those suits. Larry Keen never lost one of those suits. So he has been a major warrior for the Second Amendment. He wrote the NSSF brief, amicus brief with the Supreme Court, which was quoted by the justices in the opinion. And he's got some thoughts on where we're going to be going and what's going to be in the crosshairs. Here's Larry Keen. Maybe the first thing, Larry, is this is a non-lawyer thing to really think about, but give me a sense of yesterday morning, how you felt.
I was obviously elated by and relieved to some degree that the decision had finally come out. As you know, we waited and waited what seemed like an eternity as the end of the court's term approached. So there was obviously a great deal of anticipation. And then when the decision finally came out, I was relieved to see that the court had, in fact, as we had expected and hoped for, found that the Second Amendment provides an individual right. I was disappointed, frankly, that the court decided the case on a 5-4 vote. Drawn down the usual ideological lines, as we have seen so many times from this court, even in this term and even within just the last week, for example. I had been hopeful, having attended the oral arguments, that the vote would be more like 6-3 or 7-2. And frankly, given the clear merits of the of our side of this question, it really should have been 9-0. And it is remarkable to me, and troubling, frankly, that this court could have four justices not believe that this right that has been in the Constitution, in the Bill of Rights, from the very beginning, is now somehow only just been discovered to be an individual right. And that they still don't believe that it's an individual right, despite the clear historic record that, and everywhere else in the Constitution, where it refers to the people, it is referring to individuals, not to the state government, not to militia, certainly not to the federal government. So that was, pause for concern. And I think what it underscores in this election year is that elections matter. Who the president is and who they get to pick as justices in the Supreme Court matters very much to our individual liberties and certainly to the Second Amendment. If President Bush had lost and it was President Kerry, there would be no Judge Roberts. There would be no Justice Alito. And then there would be no Second Amendment.
That is a terrifying thought.
Elections matter. And we have a choice this November between Senator McCain and Senator Barack Obama. And, despite what he says now, Senator Obama, claiming that he's always thought that it was an individual right, didn't sign on to the amicus brief by the other senators that Senator McCain signed on to. And he also voted to ban handguns when he was in the Illinois legislature. And he voted against the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act, so he voted to allow frivolous lawsuits like the lawsuit by his hometown, Chicago, I guess not really his hometown, but by Chicago, against firearms manufacturers who sold a legal product lawfully when it was later misused by criminals. So that was my reaction to the vote. I'm still pouring through the decision now. I haven't even had a chance. But I was very glad to see that it was Justice Scalia that wrote the opinion, because I think he is really an incredible writer, and probably, personal opinion, I think he's the smartest guy on the court.
My girlfriend, who is an attorney, said that he is, from her opinion, the best drafter on the court.
He's a brilliant, brilliant writer, and he is obviously extremely intelligent, and he lays waste to the arguments of the dissent, which frankly continue to be specious, particularly in the case of Justice Stevens.
I just want to mention briefly that some of the historical material that of course you researched for the NSSF amicus brief ended up in the decision, and that has to be a great for you.
It was really quite satisfying personally as a lawyer and someone who's been interested in this issue for some time now. And I have to credit a lot of the NSSF brief was based on the book that is now coming out from Eve Hallbrook, who helped write a number of amicus briefs that were submitted to the court as well. So he really deserved a lot of credit, most of the credit, for digging out and researching the historic facts. But it was, so I'm very just pleased that NSSF's brief was allowed to be a vessel to bring forth the research that Steve had done on this issue. And it was very gratifying to see passages from our brief, materials that were cited in our brief, being cited by the court, in fact, even by the dissent in some cases. It was also very gratifying, and I think ultimately very important in the case, that during the oral argument, Justice Kennedy asked a question of the petitioner's counsel, the former Solicitor General of the Clinton administration, Walter Dellinger, whether the Second Amendment provided a right, or whether, individuals on the frontiers, for example, had a right to have firearms for protection, for hunting, et cetera. And he, in asking that question, paraphrased very closely a portion of the NSSF amicus brief. And so when he asked that question, I almost fell out of my chair, because we recognized that was from our brief. And it was that question and a couple of other questions that he asked fairly early on in the argument, that it made it pretty clear to everybody that Justice Kennedy believed that the Second Amendment provided an individual right. And so, certainly for myself, there was a sense that of comfort in that question, knowing that, okay, here was the key swing vote.
There was the swing,
and it
yes.
turned out to be the critical swing vote in this decision. I believe that it was an individual right. So I, from that point forward, and, you know, through till today, felt that, okay, we've crossed that threshold, that we will win this case on the basis that it's an individual right. And in fact, we did. And so then to see the Justice Scalia relying upon our brief and the history that Steve Albrick had identified and that we were able to bring forward in our brief was very, very gratifying. It was important in the decision.
One phrase that I believe this is from the syllabus and then mentioned again in the opinion that struck me, and again, I'm a non-lawyer, so it's non-lawyers read things differently certainly than you do, but
you're not burdened.
Yes, I'm not burdened with any knowledge, Larry. It helps me a lot. But the phrase we're talking about, dangerous and unusual weapons. And what struck me about that, and I've certainly seen this in other places on the internet and some of the other commentary, is that phrase could prove pivotal if we ever face another assault weapons ban. On your reading, am I over-reading that?
Oh, no, not at all. I think that is going to be a critical issue. I mean, the other side is already trying to minimize the importance of this landmark decision. I mean, this case will be, it's in the pantheon of critical constitutional decisions by the Supreme Court, like, you know, Plessy versus Ferguson and Marbury versus Madison, in other cases like that. I mean, this is really historic. But I do think you're correct that some of that language in the decision can be troubling and can be misused by others to infringe and limit the right. And so I think where this will, we will see this is, of course, in the effort to renew or restore and frankly, not just restore, but to expand the Clinton gun ban, the so-called ban on so-called assault weapons. And what is quote-unquote an assault weapon? It is nothing but a semi-automatic rifle, and which are commonplace, ubiquitous, and used for hunting and target shooting and collecting, et cetera. And certainly would be, it seems to me, the kind of arm that is protected by the Second Amendment. These are very commonly owned firearms. I mean, the ban was based on cosmetic features that had nothing to do with the functioning of the firearm. So I am concerned by that comment. I'm concerned by somewhat similar comments in the Solicitor General's brief, the ATF brief, and the Department of Justice brief that was filed in this case, in which they argued for a lesser standard of review and talked about functional equivalence of firearms, which is troubling to me because I expect to see the other side push for bans on certain types of firearms and say, well, okay, you can have handguns, but you can only have revolvers, not semi-automatic or auto-loading pistols. So I am concerned, and they will clearly use that to try to limit and infringe upon the liberty interests of individuals.
I believe you said in NSSF's press release yesterday, and I may be wrong here, but I believe at the very end you were quoted as saying that this decision, while it is a monumentous decision, is more of a beginning than an ending, which is important for everybody to see. Is that fair?
Oh, absolutely. This is not the end. This is the beginning of the beginning. The right as an individual right is now clearly established, authoritatively established by the Supreme Court. So the other side can no longer make the specious argument that you don't have an individual right. So it now allows for challenges to various laws and regulations that infringe upon the Second Amendment. There will be decades of litigation. In fact, it's already started because there was a lawsuit filed in Chicago 15 minutes after the Supreme Court issued its ruling about, you know, that defines the scope of the right. And that is, you know, what happens, you know, for example, with First Amendment litigation, Fourth Amendment litigation. It never really ends. I mean, the court establishes, you know, rules, if you will, rules of law through their court decisions, and legislatures make public policy choices through legislation, and government bureaucracies like ATF make regulatory decisions. But, you know, now the argument that is advanced is the burden is on the government now to show that what they want to do does not infringe upon the individual right of citizens to keep and bear arms. And for purposes unconnected to the militia, for self-defense, for hunting, for, you know, for collecting, it doesn't have anything to do with, as Justice Stevens tried to argue, you know, being a member of the militia. So, you know, like, for example, now this lawsuit that was filed yesterday is going to challenge Chicago's equally draconian ban on the possession of handguns by citizens in Chicago. And so I think that based on the decision yesterday, that ban will fail. But then there are, you know, many other questions. For example, is the Gun Control Act provision that makes it illegal for a licensed dealer to sell a handgun to a citizen from another state, will that survive? Does the Gun Control Act provision that makes it illegal for a 19-year-old, a 20-year-old, an 18-year-old to purchase a handgun, does that withstand challenge at this point? Is the right of self-defense of a 21-year-old more important than the life of a 19-year-old who could be serving in the United States military, who could be married, who could have children? I suspect that those provisions, certainly the ban on buying handguns if you're not 21, will fall by the wayside because, you know, the constitutional right isn't based upon your age. I think provisions that, you know, I think there isn't really any serious question that bans possession by, people that are, mentally defective, et cetera.
Right.
I think that cleared because it did at the time of the enactment. So there are, you know, these will all wind up being challenged in litigation in the coming years, and courts will rule, and I suspect that the issues regarding the scope of will make their way back to the Supreme Court eventually. It'll take some years, as it always does.
Well, Larry, I know you're busy. I know you're just getting back from the NSSF Shooting Sports Summit, the very successful NSSF Shooting Sports Summit. And, you know, just one quick comment on my part is just a few years ago, the anti-gun side of the argument sought very much to swamp us with lawsuits, and you were, of course, instrumental in fighting those suits. I wonder how they feel now that the shoe is on the other foot.
I would rather be me than them today.
Larry
Keene. I would rather be me than them.
Larry Keene.
They can't be happy.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. And again, as always, I want to thank you for what you do because you fight a great fight for us. And a lot of people don't realize the tremendous amount of legal work that's involved in protecting this industry. So, Larry, thanks for joining us and thanks for what you do.